Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
An Erio's original.
Each week, we decide who's to blame for a historical tragedy. And each week, you tell us if we got it right. My name is Rebecca Delgado-Smith, and this is The Aftermath.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning into this episode of The Aftermath. Today, we'll be speaking with guest expert George Burgess. George is an ichthyologist, a marine biologist who studies various species of fish, including sharks. He's also curator emeritus of the International Shark Attack File at the Florida Museum of Natural History in Gainesville. Let's hear what this very real expert has to say about Jaws, the movie. I'm so excited to have you on our show.
Well, I'm delighted to be with you.
You know, I think you are definitely our first ever ichthyologist that we've interviewed. Now, can you explain to our listeners your area of study and tell us about your work surrounding shark attacks?
Well, I spent my career as an ichthyologist from the Greek word ichthys, shark, or a fish, rather, and I've been studying fish and specifically sharks. I sort of jumped in on shark there early because I began to specialize in sharks early in my career and spent most of my career working most heavily with the sharks and their relatives, the skates and rays.
So I was reading that the film Jaws and the novel that it's based on were inspired by an actual historical shark that attacked people off the coast of New Jersey in 1916. Can you tell us about these events?
Yes, Peter Benchley borrowed, if you will, from the real world the sequence of events that occurred in 1916 off the coast of New Jersey, in which was a single shark that moved from south to north up the coastline. And along the way was implicated in attacks on several human beings, including some deaths. And it was the first real shark scare, if you will, of the United States in our history, and still remains one of the most prominent such events that we've seen relative to sharks and humans.
And now, how did the people react to that threat of a deadly shark in their shores in 1916?
Interestingly, the people reacted much the same way as people react today when there's a a nasty shark attack in their area. And the first is denial that it even occurred. The second is skepticism that it could be a shark. Then the next reaction is to go kill some sharks. And then finally, at the end, let's talk to a scientist and see if we can figure out what the problem is. And so whether it's today, in any number of countries in the world where I've interacted with governments on shark bites, or back in 1916, the reaction seems to be about the same. And so, of course, nobody believed that sharks could attack humans in such a way in 1916. That was the general feeling of the community and even the scientific community. But then after that, once it became obvious, then they followed through with the same sort of things to go kill sharks. They folks went out with dynamite and were throwing dynamite in tidal creeks and things like that, which of course did nothing but kill everything else. That's the same as we see today. We see what I call sacrificial kills that are done after a shark bite, where authorities go out and kill some sharks, I suppose, is some form of vengeance or whatever. And the public accepts that and perhaps even demands it in some cases. But then after that, the realization is that you are going to catch the offending shark because they're very mobile and are probably miles and miles and miles away by the time you put a hook in the water. So the reality is then you got to get down to what's the basic cause of the problem and what can we do to change those causes.
So it turns out Steven Spielberg and Peter Benchley are actually quite the historians, huh?
Yeah, well, we all suffer at some level of grabbing lines and stories and things that we've heard or seen from other places because they're good. Obviously, Bentley understood that the context of the 1916 was formed a wonderful basis for a book, and freely jumped on it. He also was very good at also having done his some looking into sharks and so forth, such that he developed some of his characters on the basis of real life scientists or fishermen or whatever. And again, good writers do that all the time. Their eyes and their ears are open all the time, and they're making mental notes that sometimes become characters in books.
Yeah, so I read that very little was known about sharks in 1916. Why is that, and how far have we come?
We know less about sharks than we know about other fishes even today, 100 years later. But the reality is that sharks have always been sort of the D-list, actors and actresses, so to speak, fish world, because they're not generally regarded as particularly good eating. The thought process among many fishermen is that sharks, of course, eat other fishes. And so if they eat the salmon or the cod or the flounder or whatever, the things that are worth money fishing for, then they must be bad. And so that was part of the reputation of sharks was perhaps ill-informed, but nevertheless built on the premise that sharks are eating our food and taking our money away from us.
Ah, so if we can't eat them, we're not interested in researching about them.
Precisely. And regrettably, as a scientist, I can tell you that it costs money to do research. You have to have funding to help support your field program or whatever you're doing. And so limited resources in the scientific arena, particularly in the fish arena here, are usually sent to the top of the line, the A-list actors. And that would be the food fishes that command the highest prices.
Ah. So what types of sharks are most likely to attack humans? Can you tell us more about these species, like where they live and what their feeding habits are?
Yes. Well, the sharks, of course, that we're most concerned about are those that get to a larger size. Keep in mind that not all sharks are white sharks that get to 20 feet long. Most sharks, in fact, are well under 10 feet in length, and most of them under 6 feet. a big group of sharks that live in the deeper sea sometimes don't make a foot in length. So not all sharks are big. Not all of them have large teeth that can do damage to us. And of course, not all of them are actively found in areas where we as humans interact. And where is that? That's the shallow areas off our coastline. We enter the sea as non-water breathing animals. We're eco-tourists as we visit the near shore environment, and that means we don't get get deeper than about 6 feet most of the time, because we want to keep our heads above toes touching the bottom. So most people that enter the sea then are within in depths of 6 feet or less, and the sharks that live in that area, usually the surf zone, although sometimes bays and lagoons, but primarily in the surf zone, that's a good area to be a shark. And so certain species of sharks are found near shore, and some of those sharks get to some size. And so what happens is what we have is ecotourists interacting with sharks in their native habitat, and so sometimes interactions occur. Of those, on the east coast of the United States, the primary sharks that one is most likely to interact with in the sea would be black tip sharks, spinner sharks, bull sharks, and certain hammerheads. Now, of those, the hammerheads are virtually non-dangerous, because they simply don't interact with humans that much, and they have small mouths. Whereas the other guys, which can get 6 feet to 10 feet in length, depending on the species, can cause damage whether they intend to bite a human or not. And what occurs in the surf zone, we think, is that sharks are making mistakes in an arena where visibility is poor because of breaking surf and turbulence, where those breaking waves and currents are difficult to deal with if you're trying to make a living, and sharks are out there. And so they have to make quick decisions and quick grabs, oftentimes in relative blindness. And sometimes the things they bite at are the movements of human legs and arms, primarily in the surf zone, where we, of course, are extremely uncoordinated and ungraceful. There's nothing more ungraceful than a human being trying to swim. So kicking of the feet, the splashing of the hands, the yelling, other sorts of things that are going on in as we play in their dining room have lead to potential interactions.
So, but they don't necessarily, you're saying they don't necessarily like to eat us.
Most sharks that are involved in bites on humans normally feed upon smaller fishes. And, of course, you know, we're a 5 to 6 foot long fish. So that makes us eminently not searchable. If we're looking for a 1 foot mullet and suddenly you get a 6 foot me, it's going to go after the 1 foot mullet because that's what it normally eats. Those are their natural food items, what their preferences are. And humans aren't a normal part of the food chain. So for 99.9% of all sharks, they've never tasted a human being.
Oh, interesting. They haven't acquired, we're an acquired taste. I hope we stay that way. I hope they never acquire our taste.
No, that's right. One might argue that it probably indicates that we're not very tasty.
That's really good to hear. That's good to hear. So how likely are sharks to be repeat offenders?
That's the $750 question. It's a situation where we as scientists have very rarely been able to attribute multiple attacks to a single shark. I can count on my hands the number of instances that has occurred historically. And we've looked at information on shark attack going back to the 1500s. So highly unusual for a single shark to go rogue, if you will, to become the serial killer of the natural world. And it's a very unusual circumstance.
So if you had to guess, what do you think made Jaws the movie shark so hungry? Why did he go on such a killing spree?
I suppose the answer, we don't know for sure at this point, especially looking back at attacks that occurred over 100 years ago. We still speculate on what shark was involved off of New Jersey, for instance. I'm of the opinion that it was a white shark. Some others have suggested historically that it would be a bull shark. I go into more detail on why I choose white shark at some other time. But the reality is that these animals are going about doing their business. And in some cases, if an animal was involved in multiple attacks, we can only hypothesize, much as we do with humans that are serial killers or snipers or whatever, that there's something wrong in their brain that has affected their behavior. And whether that's a disease or a condition or an injury on their body that makes them, perhaps more aggressive, we can't tell for sure. And unless you catch the actual animal that was involved and do a full dissection and a necropsy on it, you're never going to get that answer. And of course, we very seldom, if ever, catch the shark involved in an individual bite. So the answer is we don't know.
I had a feeling, but I wanted to try anyway. In the movie, the mayor of Amity Island refuses to close the beaches because he doesn't want to hurt the seasonal economy of their summer resort town. Now, do you think that he put his residents at risk?
Yeah. And I don't have to tell you that there's many parallels we can look at in today's world where similar things are occurring.
Yes, I would agree. We've talked about that a bunch. I'm assuming if you were mayor, you would have responded differently.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Unsurprisingly, that kind of reaction from a mayor or whoever's in charge of the local community is the status quo, the standard for everywhere in the world. And your first thing when we get involved in a shark attack situation is to have to deal with the politics of science. And again, we're seeing this abundantly well today in our current world. But you've got to, scientists, we just want to get the information straight. And then measures that you do to react to that information become social or political in terms of how they're followed up on. As scientists, we want to give you just what the information is, what's going on, why it's occurring, and we might offer some suggestions as to what needs to be done in terms of the best available next steps. But in the end, those are social and political decisions that are made. And once again, we're seeing the same consequences today as we saw in 1916. So if you don't close the beaches and then another attack occurs on your beach, you're a bad guy and you deserve whatever punishment for making the wrong decision. On the other hand, if you're follow good scientific advice, the most logical way to proceed to save lives and injuries, well, then you're doing the right thing.
So in the movie, going along that, Quint, who's a professional shark hunter, who's got a temper and a smallish boat, in my opinion, gets hired to kill the shark. Now, who should local officials have called to capture this particular shark, Jaws? Could the Coast Guard have helped? How would you have dealt with that situation?
Well, first of all, you've got to understand that the actual premise within the movie Jaws was an exaggeration of the natural world. And that's often happens in book writing and in movies. Of course, we see all the time exaggerations in visual media. So the actual premise that there was a single gigantic shark out there that was going to hold a vendetta against the human race
is preposterous. And so it was an exaggeration from the start. In the normal world, where you have a couple of shark attacks in a given area, the order of business would be simply to close down those beaches for a period of time, keeping people out of the water until the threat of that shark, assuming it's a single shark, more than likely multiple sharks, occurs as those sharks dissipate and move into other areas. And so that's the standard, would be a standard practice that, that good governance would deal with. So the whole movie and book, of course, were built a little bit on, on some presumptions that weren't quite right. So, but to give that position in the movie its due credit, it was a very accurate look at how a local politician will be tempted to ignore the warning signs of science and make some really bad decisions that can affect the lives of their citizens.
So was that shark in 1916 ever caught?
I believe so, and so do others. There was a white shark that was caught within a few days of the last attacks that occurred in a tidal creek in northern New Jersey called Mattawan Creek. And it's just inside the bay. And that shark was eventually caught in the bay. And according to newspaper articles of the time, human remains were removed from the stomach of the shark and identified as one of the victims. Now, as scientists, we can't just trust the written word of a newspaper, 100 years ago. And so that was never followed up scientifically by scientists at the time. They show a picture of the thing, and it was hung up, and it was actually shown in a storefront for a week or so in New York. Someone got the thing and showed it off. So it was a well-known thing. But that was the white shark that was caught. And that's part of the reason why I believe that the attacking shark was a white shark. If it was done today, we would have had a lot better understanding of what went on, and we would have done a more efficient job of dissecting the animal and making a call.
Well, that's good to hear that it was caught. How long do sharks live? Just, wondering the potential if it could still be out there.
No, it's long dead. a white shark might live 50 years, something like that. And so a white shark of the size of the one that was caught there would have probably been, if it hadn't been caught, could have lived maybe to what? They would have probably been 10 years old. So probably been, could have probably lived until the 1950s, probably, if other things were all equal.
Okay, so we're safe. Okay, good. I'm curious. I'm very curious about this. Knowing everything that you know about sharks, do you go in the water when you go to the beach?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, it's each year, the sharks kill, on average, 6 human beings worldwide. 6 worldwide. Think of the hundreds of millions of people that go into the water and the billions of hours that are spent in the sea each year by humans, by animals that splash like hell, that are making noise, that are doing everything they possibly can to attract a shark, and yet only 6 people die. So the chances of you on your vacation, on your late night dip or whatever, dying are infinitesimally small. That said, no one wants to have that on their gravestone that they checked out in the shark.
That's right. I'm from Miami, so I am I spent a lot of time as a child having nightmares about this.
There are a lot of people that saw the movie Jaws, and keep in mind that came out initially in 1975, so that's 45 years ago. There's still people that won't go in the water because it scared them so much that they won't do it. That said, we need to remember that the movie that scared everybody and the book that was written are works of fiction. And they're there for entertainment purposes. They are not documentaries, and they're not scientific papers. So as long as people understand when they go to see a movie that it's not all real, then you come out with you know, entertained and not scared. In the case of the movie Jaws, the initial one, it was done so well that a lot of people came out thinking it was like a documentary. And so they believed all the hyperbole and all the exaggerations and, quite frankly, all the errors that were in there in the movie in terms of science. And it helped foster a generation of people who have a different view of sharks.
Well, we're here to help those people get back in the water.
Well, that's good. That's good, because they deserve to be. But just keep in mind, when you enter the water, again, you're a tourist. You're visiting somebody else's dining room. And so just like you wouldn't come to somebody's human house, consider the feelings and the norms of that household, you shouldn't enter the sea and expect that all the animals and all the plants of the sea to bow down to us and so that things are perfectly safe. And so as a result, it's incumbent upon us as humans with the bigger brains and the fact that that we can dominate a world around us to understand fully that when we enter the sea, we're taking a chance, just like we take a chance when we go hiking in the mountains or go visit the Serengeti Plain for ecotourism purposes. There's a chance that there's danger out there and that you got to be careful. And it's incumbent upon us to make those changes.
Fantastic point. Be a good guest, people. So finally, if you had to pick one person or thing who are to blame for Jaws the movie, for the tragic loss of life, who or what would that be?
I blame that naked girl who was skinny dipping at night for the whole thing, because if it wasn't for that, there'd been no opening for the movie and the rest of it wouldn't have worked real well.
Wow, that's I didn't see that one coming, George, but thank you for that. Well, George, thank you so much for coming on our show and, you know, helping us understand sharks and the historical background of, you know, one of the best horror movies of all time.
It was. It's a great movie. I love Jaws. I can watch it again anytime. It's always tough as an ichthyologist to watch it because there's errors in there. And the first time I saw it, I was a graduate student at the University of North Carolina in 1975. And when the movie came out, myself and one or two other grad students went to watch it. And of course, we were all studying fish. And so we all knew something about what's going on. And we sat in the last row. And when people were screaming in horror, we were laughing and rolling on the floor because the things weren't right. And so, of course, it might have had something to do with the fact that we had a sort of pre-party before we went to the movie. But nevertheless, we still have fun watching it. And every time we watch Jaws, any fish guy will immediately jump up and say something, because it obviously had lots of problems.
Well, we'll have to have a screening with you there.
Yeah, that'd be fun. I was just going to say, one of my favorite parts of the movie was when Richard Dreyfuss, who's playing the scientist and did a pretty good job on that. I enjoyed his portrayal of it because it kind of matched up what you'd think. But he's looking at a body, a dead body. And of course, unless Richard Dreyfuss was me, I'm basically the only guy in the world who looks at shark attack victims, both from the medical standpoint and the biological one. But so he's in there doing an autopsy on a human, which no scientist would ever do. But that said, he says, "Oh, this was not caused by a Squalus acanthus." And of course, that's the genus and species of the spiny dogfish, a little shark that gets to about 3 feet long, has teeth that are hard, calling teeth. And so to go ahead and make a reference to that just had the whole room roaring when seen by a bunch of fish people.
What a great perspective just to watch that movie from. I'm sure there's so many jokes laughable moments I missed.
Yeah, as in anything, I guess there's subtlety in these things. But if you're going to go watch Jaws, just watch the first one. Don't watch any of the sequels, because each sequel became increasingly ridiculous, and it made the first one was fine cinema. Thereafter, they just became moneymakers.
Well, good. That's good advice. Thank you. That's advice from a shark expert, people. Well, thank you so much, George. This was such a fun opportunity for me. So, and I think our listeners are going to really enjoy this.
Well, good being with you, and be safe.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
With us today, we have producer Amanda Lund.
Rebecca, that was such a fun interview.
I got to tell you, Amanda, that, I love having this podcast, and we get to do such cool stuff. Somehow we've put ourselves in a position where we get to talk to all of these really cool experts. But that was just thrilling for me.
I mean, I don't know. It just really, the way he sort of laid things out was just so interesting. And it really puts Jaws, the movie, in a whole new perspective. And oh my God, to have the chance to go back in time and watch it with him and all his fish friends in the theaters. I think if I did have a time machine, like forget going back to like Shakespearean England, I would just want to go back and watch Jaws with the fish guys.
Oh my God, will you bring me?
yes.
What I know, I really did want to be his friend.
I mean, he was so lovely, and God, did he make some great points, and I just was scribbling down notes.
I mean, we have to talk about the most obvious one, at least for me. I mean, he blamed the skinny dipper.
Oh, that was just so amazing. I mean, and you know what? We were being so sensitive to like, don't blame the victim, but I think, and I take, you know, that was in part, a large part me, but I do think there is something about, you know, you wouldn't go to someone's house for dinner fully nude.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, the perspective he gave us about like going into the water, you know, we're a dinner guest and we're the food, you know. So what are we thinking? Of course, we need to be very respectful of our oceans and the people who live there. And she was splashing around. She was, like you said,
she was swimming at night. She didn't have any sort of bathing suit on that might differentiate her from a seal. And, you know, it was just poor etiquette.
Oh, my God. You should have seen me. I had my hands up in the air. Like
the other thing, just going back to how George said when he has a unique experience watching Jaws because of his expert knowledge on sharks. I feel like that's how we are watching La La Land.
It's true.
I'm just screaming at it, being like, that's not how it is.
That's so true. That's probably why my La La Land experience was movie watching experience was terrible. I couldn't roll my eyes far back enough.
I know. It sent me into an existential crisis, that film. Okay, so what else did you think that we maybe missed from after talking to George? Because I have my little list here. I want to see if we wrote down any of the same things.
Well, I thought we covered a lot of it with the mayor, obviously. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I thought it was fascinating that he also made the connection, you know, to the time that our current times and our political situation. Yes. Two things. I was like, oh, we should have put politics up on the board.
Yes. Yes. What did he say something about? I wrote the politics of science.
Yes.
Is what he said.
And we also should have put up not listening to our scientists.
We totally missed that one because it did come up, I believe, in our conversation. But for some reason, we didn't get it up on the board. And I think, you know, actually, Joe Biden even said this in that horrible, awful, if you can call it a debate, whatever that was, the other night. He said he used the phrase like muzzling the scientists.
Oh, I mean, that's a huge part of this movie.
Yeah.
So
it is. So I do think that should have gone up on the board. He also, you know, we had capitalism up on the board, but he made a really fascinating point that we don't know enough about sharks because they are eating the A-list fish, which is so funny that he used A-list and D-list to describe the fish. And I would never think of sharks as D-list because they're so sort of popular. They're having a moment, what with Shark Week and everything. But I understand his point that because they're not making us money, if anything, they're costing us money, that people aren't paying to have research done. So I thought we could have put lack of research up on the board.
That's a great point. That's a really good point. Yeah, I thought that was so interesting too. I guess if you can't eat it and therefore farm it, right, then you're just not, the research money isn't there. It's just not there.
I guess not. And they're also not killing enough people to really be a super threat. So
how about that? Six people a year. I guess it's just when it comes out in the news that there's been a shark attack, everyone freaks out. Like he said, the different steps of, you know, denial, shock, all the things. And it makes it a bigger thing. But I don't know. I guess our chances are good as long as we don't go splashing in the water. I think, you know, I think I'm going to feel much better at going to the beach.
Well, that's good. And, you know, I love the beach. So this is really helpful for me.
Yeah.
The other thing I thought was so interesting, he mentioned this right at the beginning about how after a shark attack, there tends to be what he called sacrificial kills, like vengeance kills, where everyone kind of knows you're not exactly killing the right shark because that shark's long gone. But it's like kind of just like this fake masquerade we all go through, like killing some random sharks, being like, OK, everyone can get back in now, even though it's
doesn't make any sense.
Oh, so like killing for killing's sake or something, like
yeah,
revenge.
It's almost just for show. Yeah, right. Just to be like, well, we showed them, even though it just nature doesn't work like that.
So it would have been okay. So two things also that we should have put up on the board. One was the capitalism of fish. Would you call it that?
Yeah, I mean, to me that kind of goes, because we had capitalism already, but we were more talking about the mayor not shutting down the resort town. But yeah, I think it's kind of like lack of research on sharks, which is, I guess, due to capitalism.
Right. So lack of research, and also killing for show gives us a false sense, and it gave the people in the movie a false sense of security, right?
Yeah, so I guess we could call, I mean, I guess that's kind of a little bit more of a stretch to kind of connect that to the actual movie, because they did do one revenge kill in the movie, but then they, Jaws, because Jaws is a fictional shark, it continued to kill, which normally Jaws would have just, you know, I don't know, like fled to international waters or something.
Yeah.
So he was out of the jurisdiction. He would have swam to Mexico. The other thing I thought was interesting was, okay, so George equated a shark that kills multiple times to like essentially a serial killer, and said that the only way to really explain that would, like, you would do with a human if maybe they had a brain injury or something, which I thought was so interesting to think of those parallels between like a deranged shark and a deranged human. So I was like, maybe we should have put like Jaws being a psychopath or a brain injury, or like, did Jaws have abusive parents, or just the same treated the same way we treat a serial killer?
Thank you so much for bringing that up. I found that so interesting as well, when he was talking about that, and just making that connection. I think, yeah, what is that? It could be like Jaws's personal trauma.
Okay.
Right?
I mean, there must be something going on with Jaws to be deranged like this.
Right. I mean, we haven't gotten a diagnosis. It's undiagnosed.
Yeah.
Obviously, I don't think we'll ever be able to get that diagnosis. And it's definitely untreated. Undiagnosed, yes, and untreated, whatever that might be, whether it's a physical trauma or more of a brain trauma or something, right?
I just actually had an idea, and this is all conjecture, but what if Jaws, when Jaws was young, was the subject of one of these sacrificial attacks? So like, there was some other older shark, this is back, I don't know, this would have been like more in the 40s or something, there is another shark who like made an attack on a human, and then they went out and hunted a few other sharks, and maybe killed Jaws's friend or killed Jaws's father or something as this sacrificial kill. And then that sort of turned Jaws like into hating people, because someone he loved was killed for no reason.
Yes, Amanda. Definitely speculation.
But can't you see it? Doesn't it make perfect sense? I need to write some fan fiction stat.
Yeah, look, you know, it could be. It could be anything. But I feel like I really take your point, and I wonder, you know, because we ended up sending the mayor, right, to jail.
Yes, and then toxic masculinity got the slap.
But I wonder if we should have slapped the shark. And I guess, can you slap a shark for its trauma?
I mean, it seems a little mean.
That's right. That's right. But
and I actually think you're supposed to punch a shark right in the nose. Yeah,
yes, I think you're right.
Or between the eyes.
I don't think you run from a shark, because the odds are it's a faster swimmer, you know?
Yeah, I mean, if you're running, you're already good.
That's
you're on
right. Really good point. Well, do you think we should have slapped the skinny dipper? Or maybe like bad manners, bad guest manners.
I like it that. I also like some sort of area of like lack of research or lack of understanding.
Our lack of understanding of the ecosystem, maybe. Like, what are we thinking?
Or like the politics of science is also sort of juicy.
Yeah. I mean, I think the mayor is in jail and he's better get comfy because he's not going anywhere.
I agree. I think we totally nailed it with the mayor because he also exemplifies capitalism. He exemplifies toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
I
got to tell you, I think personally, I'm leaning towards the skinny dipper. And I'll tell you why. I think that encaptures not just like our lack of understanding of our ecosystem, but also like this. I mean, I don't know what else to call it, but like this American way of like, okay, well, you know, I'm in the ocean now. Like I'm in, and so it's mine.
And just sort of taking no precautions.
Right.
It's, and that also connects to this like lack of research because, you know, she didn't have the information.
Right. So it's like, if that kind of gets the slap and then we just do like a little bit of a finger wave, you know what finger wave I'm talking about? Like, come on, people, we need more funding. Yeah.
Okay, I see. So the finger is straight up and it's going sort of horizontal.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
I'm pointing the finger and waving at lack of funding.
It's more of a wag.
It's a wag. Yeah. Like I got my eye on you. So there's eye.
Yeah, I see.
Eyesight involved.
So who are you? How are you wanting to phrase this slap?
I think let's phrase it as... bad ocean guest.
Okay.
Our bad ocean guest.
I mean, essentially we are slapping the woman skinny dipping for being a rude ocean guest.
Rude ocean guest. That's good. That's better. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I like that.
So I'm calling it rude ocean guests. You're getting the big slap.
I like it. I think, you know, we're making George proud there.
Before we go, though, Amanda, we got to talk about, you know, the email we got.
I saw this. Yeah, Paul wrote us a little correction, sort of, you know, put us in our place a bit.
Yeah, we got our first angry email about Jaws. And it was from our own guest.
Which makes sense because the episode hadn't dropped yet.
That's right. So we're at 100% angry emails from the people who have listened to the episode. And I got a cop to this. I called one of the characters, a very famous character in the movie, Sam Quint. And this was because of some my online, you know, digging around, but I hadn't read the book yet. And Paul, who's, you know, a real expert on Jaws, the movie and the book, called me out on it, saying Quint has no first name. There's no who's Sam Quint is what he said. So
he was a little really taken aback.
Yeah, there was some back and forth, and he apparently did a lot more research on online and sent us an angry like screenshot with he also managed to like circle it with red. So he definitely edited this photo.
I don't know that I would call it angry as much as indignant.
But he circled a finding from online and it says, you know, the question, someone asked the question, did Quint have a first name? And the response was, Quint had no first or middle name, all, you know, bold. Peter Benchley did not give him one in the book, and Spielberg did not give him one in the movie. You lose all credibility by creating a Jaws wiki with patently false information. This his only known name was Quint.
And okay, so point taken. And it was just so powerful how Paul chose not to put any of his own text or commentary in this email. It's simply a blank email with an attachment with a big red circle around that piece of information. And he just let that speak for itself.
Yes, it was very direct. So thank you, Paul. Your point is very much taken. And we'll this is why we do the show. This is why we go back and forth. This is why we have an aftermath. Right, Amanda?
That's exactly right. And we will be issuing a public apology from our social media accounts as well. So we have our publicists furiously working away on that.
Okay. So just, you know, a little housekeeping, some little housekeeping.
Yes, and speaking of, a few more announcements before we wrap up, we have our live show coming up. So everyone mark your calendars, October 23rd at 5 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Go to houseseats.live to reserve your spot. Tickets are pay what you can. We had so much fun on the last one. So we had everyone chiming in the chat room. You can yell at us in person this time as we're getting it wrong live. And we're talking about who's to blame for the notorious serial killer, Ed Gein. And he's the guy who was like making lamps and stuff out of human skin.
Yes, very disturbing. And also he's the guy who Silence of the Lambs is inspired by, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and Psycho. So it's going to be creepy, I think. Are you scared?
It's going to be creepy. I haven't been sleeping since we announced the live show. I'm very scared. And what's cool about this, even if you can't make it, say you've got to work late or something that Friday, the live show will be up for a week, so you can watch it anytime between then. And of course, we'll release it as its own episode as well.
Yeah.
But I think it's just going to be really, really fun. We've got a great guest.
That's right. Amy Garcia, who you guys might know from Dexter and Lucifer, those TV shows.
Yeah, she's sort of a scream queen, if you will.
Yeah. and of course, Clayton will be on the listener liaison, the viewer liaison. He'll be in the chat room. And if you let him bring up capitalism for this one, I mean, this should be capitalism proof, but
I don't know how it could go back to capitalism unless he was like selling his human skin goods on Etsy or something and needed like to keep up with buyer demand.
So yeah, you just got to keep him in check, people.
And then also I want to just remind everyone, if you haven't already, to rate and review the podcast because it helps other people discover The Alarmist. Here's one that we just got from WickZX. Funny and addictive, 5 stars. I just found this podcast and started with Taylor Swift, Kanye West, and fell in love. So thank you. And if you haven't already, please, please, please go and rate and review.
Yep, we really appreciate it. So thanks for listening, everyone. And tune in next week. We will be discussing who's to blame for Vlad the Impaler.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.